Deep news, reviews, commentary, not just another podcast.
Are the ordinary people broadcast?
Don't be too proud of this technological terror you've constructed.
Now here comes your host, Kyle A. Barron of the World Series.
Welcome to the Big Ball Broadcast, episode 54. My name is Kyle A. Barron. I'm a voice actor from L.A. You can hear me as Ganju Shiba and Sosuke Aizen on Bleach on Cartoon Network.
And this is your co-host, HFIL Steve. I'm an anime journalist and webmaster of KyleABarron.com.
HFIL? What are you talking about, dude?
Are you edited DBZ now?
I am, thanks to you and some of your off-air comments.
Oh, boo. What did I do?
Because you didn't edit out my vulgarities in the last podcast. But you edited out all of yours.
Yeah, you know, like when I said...
I remember that clearly.
Yeah?
But then it somehow disappeared. I have a feeling it's going to disappear from this podcast as well. I said bullshit, and you left it on.
I know. Scandalous, wasn't it?
Good thing we're rated PG-13.
Yeah, I was just about to mention, don't we have a little rating on our blog page that warns people?
We do. In this day and age, we have to be very disclaimer-laden.
Yeah, because we don't want you, or if you're young, then your parents, suing us. Because there's nothing to be gained. This week, Stephen King's Dark Tower movie adaptation gets a director. At least it's a rumor mill at this point. What is Bilk? Batman Begins sequel, The Dark Knight, has some more casting news. And speaking of Batman, there was a Batman sighting that actually caused a little alarm in some elementary schools. Scary. Anime TV. We're going to tell you about this brand new video podcast. The up-and-coming Frank Miller movie 300. You can see it a week early, and we're going to tell you how. We got a release date for the first new Evangelion movie in Japan, of course, plus Gainax's tie-in merchandise plan. NBC is bringing back the Bionic Woman. I don't know, if you're not like in your 30s, you probably have no idea what that is. But anyway, Funimation launches iTunes Store, Spider-Man 3 for the Wii gets bonus villain action, and Nintendo is considering releasing Japanese-only games on their virtual console. And we have a nice little top 12 list of movies ahead of their time. A controversial list, because you're definitely going to wonder why some titles are on there and why others aren't. But we'll definitely cover all that. I've got no email to read, but if you want to send us email, you can do so at thebigballbroadcast@gmail.com. We also have a listener comment line. I kind of retitled it my information hotline because it's a voicemail message where I just tell you about my latest projects and con appearances and stuff. But you can still leave messages and feedback, and we encourage you to do so. That number is 818-574-3607. And keep that pen out, because did you know you can listen to the Big Ball Broadcast over the phone? Yes, it is true. Yeah, it's a long distance call, but hey, what the hell, it's free. That number to listen to the BBB is 916-313-3830. And of course, you can download all of our past episodes, including this one, off our blog page, bigballbroadcast.blogspot.com.
Yay. Did you want to say anything about the new promo available for people to steal and use at their leisure?
Oh, yeah. There is a new promo. Absolutely. Put together by Mr. Mark in Philadelphia, who has his own podcast I need to plug. I actually did an interview with him for his new podcast called 44-1. And I'm not going to tell you what that means. It's kind of an insider joke for people who know about audio production and sampling rates and stuff. But anyway, 44-1, I'll put a link to that in the show notes. Make sure you download that. He's really excited, and he's a very good, entertaining chap and quite adept at throwing together a promo, because when you hear it, you're going to say, wow, they put a lot of effort into that. And say, no, it's not me or Steve. Total kudos and thank you and mucho, we're not worthy, to Mr. Mark in Philadelphia.
Yeah, because we're talking about total effort, we're certainly not talking about Otherworld Steve.
Or HFIL Steve. Okay, well, let's kick off the content, shall we? IGN is reporting a rumor that Alias and Lost creator J.J. Abrams, who will be involved as an executive producer on the next Star Trek flick, is supposedly on board to direct the live-action adaptation of the Stephen King book series. Now, Abrams did a great job, I think, with Mission Impossible 3, and Stephen King's The Gunslinger, the volume 1 of the Dark Tower series, was always my personal favorite Stephen King work. Now, there's no mention of what format The Dark Tower will take. Either it's a one-shot movie or a miniseries. Everyone's hoping because of the scope of the story, it'll have a miniseries, but hopefully not on ABC, because censored primetime is not the best venue for this. You know, you've got elements of horror and Western and fantasy all thrown in there, so hopefully a cable outlet like Showtime or HBO or hell, direct-to-video. That'd be cool. If you've never heard of The Dark Tower, it's a story of a lead character named Roland, and I think Hugh Jackman would make a good leading man for that. But anyway, The Dark Tower is about his quest for the Dark Tower. He's the last living member of a knightly order known as Gunslingers. The world he lives in is quite different from our own, yet it bears striking similarities to it. Politically organized along the lines of a feudal society, it shares technological and social characteristics with the American Old West, as well as bearing magical powers and the relics of a highly advanced but long vanquished society. Roland's quest is to find the Dark Tower, a fabled building said to either be or be located at the nexus of all universes. Ooh. As more details surface, we will definitely pass them along, because there are a lot of people who love Stephen King, first of all. And then next of all, saying, hey, out of all the books he has, how come The Dark Tower isn't a movie or a miniseries? Well, it looks like it's finally coming together, and I'm pretty intrigued to see what J.J. Abrams would do with the source material.
I'm a big fan of Stephen King's movies. I can't say I've really read any of his books aside from Salem's Lot and Misery. I like the Misery book a lot better than the movie, but that's just personal taste. Probably check this thing out for shits and giggles.
I've never heard anyone say the movie is so much better than the book. It's always the book is better than the movie.
I think only because in most cases the book comes out first. If you see the movie first, you probably go, oh, that wasn't in the movie. Why'd they put it in the book?
And then there's that strange case of The Shining, the 1980 movie directed by Stanley Kubrick, which was critically acclaimed. It was a big hit, but Stephen King hated it. It diverted wildly from the source material. It changed motivations and everything, and yet it later got remade into a miniseries, which was faithful to the book. But personally, I like the Stanley Kubrick one, because Kubrick is one of my favorite directors.
That's a movie that I kind of grew up with, and it's going to go down in like my top 50 favorite movies.
There you go.
What the heck is Bilk? When I first read that, the first thing that popped in my head was Blue Milk from Star Wars Episode 4, but close, but not quite. This comes from Reuters. Great news for beer and milk lovers. A liquor shop owner in Japan's largest dairy farming region has stopped crying about local spilt milk and started making beer from it instead. We came up with the idea after hearing about surplus milk, said Mr. Nakahara, head of Nakahara's liquor shop. Milk consumption has been declining steadily in Japan, and Hokkaido disposed of nearly 900 tons of milk last March due to overproduction, according to the Japanese Dairy Association. Nakahara's new brew, Bilk, a combination of milk and beer, is about 30% milk. It also contains hops, and the production process does not differ much from that of regular beer, he said. His shop started selling Bilk, which apart from a slightly milky scent, looks and tastes like ordinary beer, on February 1st after spending about 6 months developing the product with a local brewer. Bilk is only available at 6 shops or by mail order, but Nakahara is currently out of stock due to heavy media attention.
Now for this Bilk, I'm actually envisioning just this big ranch full of drunk cows.
For some reason, I just can't imagine crossing those two beverages together and have it be something I would want to put to my lips.
Oh, you mean something akin to Coke Black?
Yeah, great in concept, horrible in taste.
I still like it. I'm crazy. It tastes literally like you poured Coke in someone's coffee. I know that. I realize that, but I'm fine with it too.
I think I compared it best to when one of the Nightmare on Elm Street movies came out. I don't remember which one. The girl character didn't want to fall asleep because of Freddy. So she took a tablespoon of instant coffee and put it in her mouth and washed it back with a Coke. Yeah, I was young and impressionable, and I admit I did try that. And that's immediately what came to mind when I took my first sip of Coke Black.
Now, I am not a beer drinker. I think it tastes awful. I have no interest in beer. I don't even really drink milk. I'll drink milk with cookies, but mostly milk just goes with like oatmeal and cereal in my book. Otherwise, something for drinking would be, you know, soda, water, fruit juice.
Yeah, milk's icky. I'm not a big fan of milk.
Yeah, and if you're into voice acting, you definitely don't want a big swag of milk right before a session and get you nice and mucusy. That's right, smacking like.
But I do like beer on occasion. I don't drink often, but when I do, I prefer the microbrew stuff. Sam Adams, or when I'm in the Midwest, I like that Shiner Bock.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I remember that. It's like, what's that brand? It's like, oh, yeah, Shinerbach.
Shinerbach.
I guess every state has its own little beer that just makes them well-known.
But it does not get any better than Samuel Adams.
I'm Jim Cook. I just remember those commercials. Guy always sounded drunk.
Probably.
Drunk on his own product, you know?
What better way to live, right?
Totally.
I'm drunk and making ass loads of money.
Yay! Got some Batman news items here. Batman sighting causes school lockdown. Yep, three schools in the northern Phoenix suburb of Cave Creek were on lockdown for about 45 minutes recently after a student at Desert Arroyo Middle School reported seeing a person dressed as Batman run across campus, jump a fence, and disappear into the desert. The student described the person as 6'3 and possibly male. The police said, we're assuming it was male, although they did have a mask on. Officers combed the desert around the middle school. A nearby elementary school and high school were also on lockdown as officers sought the Caped Crusader. The result, no Batman. Now, I'm wondering if this was a comic book Batman with the underwear on top of the leotards or the movie one with the all-black muscle suit.
And nipples.
Oh, yeah, we can't forget the Joel Schumacher nipples. Oh, yeah. Oh, boy. And the butt shots.
Stop. You're giving me a headache.
Okay. Another Batman news. The Dark Knight, the sequel to Batman Begins, already has the primary cast returning, except for Katie Holmes, which we reported recently. But now Aaron Eckhart is about to sign the dotted line to play Harvey Dent. That familiar name, of course, refers to the attorney whose face was splashed with acid, and he subsequently turns into the villain known as Two-Face. Of course, you saw it on Batman Forever as Tommy Lee Jones did his over-the-top performance. I'm supposing this one will be a little more subdued, a little more psychotic, maybe, because you've also got Heath Ledger as the Joker, and of course, everyone's just excited as could be. It's like, come on, come out. Everyone loves Batman Begins. We want the Dark Knight.
I want the Dark Knight.
We all want the Dark Knight.
Are you expecting me to say more than that?
Yeah. I expect you to go, who the hell's Aaron Eckhart?
Who the hell's Aaron Eckhart?
You know what? I have no friggin' clue. But you know what? I'm going to go to imdb.com right now.
I was going to think it's probably for the best that you don't know who he is.
Yeah, you know what? You're right. Because I don't want to be biased.
No, and they did a real good job with the relaunch of the franchise. And I just hope it stays that way.
Yes, yes.
Although we know what happens with the third installment of any franchise, so I'm afraid if they make another one after this.
Oh, my. He appeared in The Wicker Man with Nicolas Cage, The Black Dahlia. He's been on several episodes of Frasier, Aaron Brockovich. He's done a lot of stuff, actually. Nothing really huge, though.
Yep, nothing I've seen.
Okay, so maybe that's good. You know, a fresh slate. We can go into it without any bias.
Well, again, you know, I keep drawing comparisons to Star Wars, the prequel trilogy, and seeing Sam Jackson in there. And I keep having flashbacks to Pulp Fiction.
That's right.
But I can't do any of my impressions because we'll have to censor those out.
Oh, the thing about the lightsaber? The one that says bad mother. Yeah, that'd be the one.
Yeah, that'd be it. If you just heard a long pause in the podcast, that's because I had to edit out a lot of dirty language.
Ooh, or did he?
You may never know. Anime TV has premiered, actually, as we're recording this. Anime and manga are leading the entertainment revolution in the United States and other parts of the world. Now, for the first time ever, be a part of the revolution as Anime TV brings viral video to a new level. Anime TV premieres February 15th at 8 o'clock Pacific Standard Time on iTunes. Anime TV is a free podcast anime review show with a cast of diehard anime fans who know their stuff. Hosted by Johnny Young Bosch from Akira Trigun and Bleach. Produced by Bang Zoom Entertainment Inc. and proudly sponsored by a bunch of places, including Kellogg's Pop-Tarts. Wow.
Ooh, nice sponsor there. Yeah, it's a little misnomer calling it anime TV because it's not on TV. It's on your computer. But, you know, in the next few years, we're all merging our media into this online downloadable experience. So I see where they're going.
And if you, it's not really a sneak peek anymore because by the time you hear this, it would have premiered. But if you want to see some footage of the cast and whatnot, I'll put a link in the show notes and you can go over and check that out.
Yay. Yeah, those guys at Bang Zoom, I've been very fortunate to work with them on Eureka 7 and some other shows, and they're very gung-ho. Those guys at Bang Zoom are also in the midst of editing a voice actor documentary that's supposed to debut later this spring, and I'm pretty excited about that because they interviewed me too. Yay! But they talked to like 100, I mean literally 100 voice talent from LA, from Dallas, Fort Worth, from Houston, from all over the place. People are chomping at the bit to see that come out, and of course when we have details, I will certainly
pass them along.
Yeah, certainly I tip my hat to Bang Zoom. They seem really aware of their audience, and they've really gone above and beyond any other U.S. dubbing studio to really get out there and touch base with the fans. And I think anime TV is very interesting for this company to undertake, and I'm definitely going to check it out.
Oh, yeah, me too. And also of note, for people who are really interested in voice acting, if they're willing to either fly out to Burbank or drive if they're close enough, several times a year they do host a voice acting class that's hosted on a weekend, and they have some voice talent teach you about the anime dubbing process. They actually get you in the actual recording studio at the Bang Zoom, and you get to see what it's like to dub anime.
That's not that voice actor boot camp, is it?
Yes, it is.
I'm moving right along.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. You're totally against that. But anyway.
I'm totally against that.
We have opposing views on that, but we're not going to get into that.
No, it's in a previous podcast. Track it down, and you get my views on that.
Moving right along. Frank Miller's 300 is coming a week early for selected fans attending WonderCon in San Francisco. Yep, Warner Brothers has teamed up with Northern Cali's largest pop culture comic book convention to screen this highly anticipated eye candy action film. It's going into wide release on March 9th, but for those who have pre-registered at WonderCon as three-day or Friday-only members, you'll be eligible to take part in the free drawing to be held that day on Friday, March 2nd at the show, with the screening taking place that night. Inspired by the work of graphic novelist Frank Miller, creator of Sin City, 300 is an epic adventure about passion, courage, freedom, and sacrifice embodied by the Spartan warriors who fought one of the greatest battles in history. Co-written and directed by Zack Snyder, director of the recent Dawn of the Dead remake, the film brings Miller's acclaimed graphic novel to life by combining live action with virtual backgrounds that capture his distinct vision of this ancient historic tale. Now, if you need any more inspiration to go check out the trailer for 300 and get interested into it, you'll also be interested to learn that its world premiere at the Berlin Film Festival happened. They received a standing ovation along with spontaneous cheering from the sold-out 1,700-strong audience. Now, that's a good sign. So for more info on this screening, visit WonderCon.com.
When it comes to movies, as most of our listeners know by now, and certainly you know, Kyle, I'm quite the cynic. But I truly have to admit that, wow, talk about being sold by a trailer alone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's already positive reviews online. I'm going to go in with the open mind that it's like, you know, like with Sin City, at the very least, you're going to come out going, wow, that looked amazing, you know?
Exactly. I really don't care if the plot falls apart after the first 15 minutes from some of the effects I've seen in the trailer. It's a movie that you just have to see all the way through and just totally absorb all this gorgeous eye candy.
Yeah, and as we reported on a previous episode, it will be in select IMAX theaters. So if you live near an IMAX theater, definitely check it out that way. Other than that, I'm hoping it's like, oh, come on, hurry up, get on DVD. I want this in my collection right now.
Yeah, it's actually the premiere IMAX release for 2007.
Done. Ta-da!
And speaking of theatrical releases, the rebuild of Evangelion has been scheduled. Executive director Hideki Anno has announced that the first Evangelion movie will open in Japanese theaters on September 1st. Reportedly, additional details and a 15-second theatrical trailer will be officially released on the 17th. That's of this month. So I'm hoping that hits the internet really, really soon. The article also states that the Evangelion franchise has generated 6,000 types of merchandise since its 1995 debut, earning roughly 150 billion yen. Now, speaking of Evangelion merchandise, you get this whole relaunch going on, you get new movies, new series coming. Well, it's only proper to have some stuff on the shelves for the kiddies to buy. These are premiering strictly in Japan, but they're available online. You have, quote, "Don't drink this" coffee and LCL orange juice, and those go on sale on April 12th. And if you're wondering where those names came from, the quotes and the pictures on the cans are parodies of the famous scene from the first episode of the anime featuring the main characters Shinji and his father Gendo. I will put a link over in the show notes. You can go over and check them out. You can buy them as individual cans or in a case, but if you buy them by the case, you get an exclusive piggy bank with it.
I'm wondering if they have a whole new line of extremely fanservice-y Asuka statues.
Or Rey. Don't forget Rey.
Of course, Rey.
And all I can say to that is, one can only hope.
Bow chicka bow wow. And speaking of Bow Chicka Bow Wow, when I was growing up in the 70s, I loved the Bionic Woman, Lindsay Wagner.
She was a hottie, at least, you know, back then. Apparently, NBC is bringing back this series. The Hollywood Reporter says that young British actress Michelle Ryan has landed the title role for the Bionic Woman. Now, if you're too young to remember, and I understand most of you probably are, the series focused on a woman who is transformed into a technological wonder with $50 million worth of bionic components implanted in her body. It was actually a spinoff of another hit TV show, The $6 Million Man, starring Lee Majors. And I used to watch that, too. And, of course, they would do all the bionic implant stuff, you know, with cheesy slow motion and weird sound effects and stuff. Did you ever watch that, Steve?
I watched The $6 Million Man. I didn't watch The Bionic Woman.
We can rebuild him, make him stronger, better, faster. Yes. Yet another case of Hollywood running out of ideas.
Now, naturally, I just hit her up on IMDb.
Oh, well, I have linked to some pictures of her. Maybe I should stick that on the show notes. I don't think she's all that. I looked at her, and it's like, well, maybe they're not the best pictures in the world. It's like, nah, Lindsay Wagner was better looking.
Apparently, she was ranked number 21 in FHM's 100 Sexiest Women of 2004.
Oh, my. Well, of course, you know, looks are subjective.
Tactile. I mean, no, we can't do that. You go to jail for that. Let me feel your looks.
That's right. We like IMDb. That's a nice little resource, kids.
Oh, you just say that because you want kids to look you up.
You're right. Hey, aren't you on there too?
I am. I believe my credits are actually accurate on there.
Ooh, cool. Okay, so what do you think, Steve? Hottie or naughty?
Hottie from the neck down.
Yeah, that's what I said. Yeah, she got a good bod, you know.
But a little busted up from the face up. She got hit by the ugly truck.
Oh, she's a butterface? Yeah, these images that come up, not too flattering.
And work safe. Damn. I mean,
yeah, I know.
And I have safe search off. Damn it.
Oh, well, I guess we should get back to the show.
At any rate, we wish her the best with that.
Absolutely. Hope it's good.
Tangents.
Yeah.
Yay! Another big launch that a lot of people have been looking forward to is finally Funimation has thrown their hat into the iTunes arena. Funimation titles are now available on iTunes USA, though not available to the Canadian or any other iTunes store. The Funimation Channel iTunes Store can be found at a link that I will graciously provide to all you kiddies in the show notes. Currently available are all 24 episodes of Desert Punk, all 26 episodes of Samurai 7, and 20 out of 24 episodes of Speed Grapher. All three are Gonzo Productions. The videos are only available as an English dub. They're 640 by 360 pixels, which is actually 16 by 9 widescreen. And they are, I repeat, are DRM protected.
Ooh, you know, it's good that it's dub only. I'm not saying that because I'm a dub actor. Who wants to read subtitles on the size of that screen?
Yeah, I mean, especially if you have the video iPod, which I'm sure most people are going to download this content to. I couldn't imagine trying to read subtitles on such an itty bitty.
No.
Good for them. I mean, it's about time that they threw their hat into that financial arena.
Yeah, it's quite lucrative.
How lucrative?
Very lucrative.
You know, on a side note, I was at some site yesterday. Forgive me for not giving proper credit, but it was a Q&A thing, and somebody asked, why are anime DVDs so expensive? Why am I spending, you know, $40 on three episodes? And the response was quite shocking, and this isn't really confirmed or denied, but, like, on the down, though, I guess some English dub producers have said the cost of licensing shows is somewhere in the neighborhood of $20,000 to $80,000 per episode. That's pretty nuts. And then they said if you add a dub cast on top of that, that literally doubles your expenses for the show. So getting it out in a variety of formats for people to pay for, certainly a good idea for the dubbing companies.
Yeah, to recoup that. And, you know, as I've often said on this show and at panels and appearances at cons all over the place, anime does not pay well from an acting standpoint. You don't make a lot of money doing it. And I understand why, because, you know, these budgets are blown just acquiring the title in and of itself.
Right, because everything's a matter of licensing down to the art and everything. The art you see in the DVD covers, if there's a picture gallery that's included on the DVDs. And that's why a lot of people wonder why a lot of anime DVD releases are so skimpy. I guess with the exception recently with Funimation getting more involved with having boxes for the Volume 1 and putting in some pretty cool booklets. But for a while, it was really sparse, and I know Dragon Ball Z is one of those examples. It's because the cost of what you're paying, not only is to have the right to that and then to distribute it and get it manufactured and paying the dubcast on top of that, by the time you're done, you're not going to show a profit if you throw much more in.
Right. But if you get some grand exposure on primetime TV a la Cartoon Network and a la Funimation, it's just another really, really profitable way to, you know, get the exposure out there.
Right. So getting it to the number one internet content provider, certainly a great idea.
Definitely. Well, if you're lucky enough to own a Wii already, or somehow managed to get one between now and the opening of Spider-Man 3 in theaters, you'll be happy to know the upcoming video game adaptation will feature exclusive bonus villains. Morbius and Shriek will be on the Wii version of Spider-Man 3. Check the show notes for a link to the official website for the game trailer, developer's blog, downloads, and more. Basically, it's sm3thegame.com. The Spidey 3 game comes out on multiple consoles on May 4th. Let's cover for a moment the whole video game tie-in to comic book movies. The trail so far is not that impressive. You know, Superman Returns, I know you didn't see it, but, you know, overall, a very positive reviewed movie. And then the game comes out way after the theatrical release of the movie, and still it was not well received. And now Ghost Riders come out in the theaters, and then the game is out, and IGN just gave it like a 4 out of 10. This is just, it's abysmally bad.
For any of our listeners can confirm this, either a student email in or call in, but I've seen some of the footage of the Ghost Rider game, and it looks to me that it was built on the God of War engine. A lot of the combat with the chains looks just like Kratos' combat with his Blades of Chaos and God of War. Now, if that's the case, I'm really confused because the first God of War, one of the only PS2 titles to get like a straight 10 on a lot of review sites. Now you have God of War 2 coming out on March 13th, and I know IGN gave it a 9.7, and a lot of other sites are giving it in the neighborhood around 9.5. So how can you take such an awesome engine and a halfway decent character? It's like because you got like movie attached to it, like movie adaptation, it's gotta suck balls.
It's just another way to cash in with the merchandise and everything. You know, for example, all the Superman Returns toy lines just sitting on the shelves. Nobody's buying it. Good movie, crappy merchandise. No one wants it.
You mean you didn't run out and buy one of those inflatable supersuits?
Okay, I bought two. But other than that, no, I'm just kidding. I didn't buy that.
Now, I know a lot of people out there don't watch G4 anymore because they feel it really fell away from its roots, but I still do from time to time, particularly X-Play with Adam Sessler and Morgan Webb. And I have to totally agree with a statement they keep making on the show, especially when they talk about games like Ghost Rider, and that is, if you keep going out and buy crappy games, they're going to keep making crappy games. So if you want to make crappy games like Ghost Rider go away, stop buying the crappy games.
Yeah, go informed. I mean, you may not agree with critics because, you know, everyone has an opinion, right? But before I buy a game, I definitely want to read feedback on it. And if I'm psyched for a game and then suddenly I read a bunch of bad reviews, my interest in buying that game goes way, way down.
I try really hard not to put too much credence into reviews because they're very speculative. One man's trash is another person's treasure. But when you see a game that's like successively hitting fours on review sites, you kind of get this sense that it's more than just opinion. It kind of starts turning a little factual at that point.
Yeah, if you look at the list of successful, great, popular tie-in games, the list is not too high. Plenty of bad ones.
And it's really unfortunate, especially now that we have all the new hardware out there on the market.
Yeah, you have, you know, multiple console, you know, like the release of Avatar. You know, as great a show as that is, you think, on paper, yeah.
Yeah, one of the most abysmal games I ever purchased.
There you go. What's up with that?
There's a game I went into blindly. I bought it solely because it was Avatar, The Last Airbender. I'm like, ooh, the show's absolutely incredible. Then the game's got to at least rock, and I want my money back.
And I don't know if it fared any better on like one console, say, over another, because, you know, sometimes the gameplay is a little bit different. You know, there's Pirates of the Caribbean, which is a little bit different on DS than PSP, but then Xbox and PS2 are pretty much similar engines, where the Xbox gets slightly better graphics and, you know, but they do little tweaks here and there, you know.
I'm curious if the Wiimote kind of brings a new dimension to shitty games.
I don't know, but I just thought of something, you know, the whole action of flinging webs for Spider-Man. I wonder if that will come into play.
I think more so people are definitely waiting for the lightsaber Wiimote. I've been reading a lot about that, and there's a brand new game coming out from Lucas Games that looks absolutely incredible. It's got a name now, and I totally forget what it is. But this is the one that the trailer was on YouTube, and everybody's freaking out over. over it because it was absolutely insane looking. My only concern is that I hope the Wii can handle it, like, graphically. Definitely a PS3 or an Xbox 360 game, but if the Wii can handle it, and if Lucas does finally officially release a lightsaber peripheral to use, that's just too much.
Well, maybe they can come up with a compromise. Maybe they could do, like, Star Wars Lego version, you know?
Hey, you know, still a massive part of their franchise. Those games go gold the day they come out, so...
Yeah, and they're a lot of fun.
I just want the opportunity to run around the house with a lightsaber and not look like a total ass. I mean, I'll do it anyway, but for the sake of playing a game, you can only crack on me so hard.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, this podcast, we cover a lot of things. We cover a lot of technology and games. Of course, we love movies, too. So, firstshowing.net recently published their list of the top 12 movies ahead of their time. These are movies that are judged primarily because of their technical and visual effects achievements. Most of these became the staple for referencing great visual effects after they came out. It's not necessarily that their subject matter or content was not accepted until years later. Keep in mind a few of these stick out like sore thumbs because they blatantly defy the criteria listed here. First one listed, Psycho. Technical editing achievements, definitely. It certainly invented and created the slasher genre. Psycho is one of the best horror films ever made, I think, okay? 2001, A Space Odyssey. Well, obviously, Stanley Kubrick, you know? Jaws. The word blockbuster came from the fact that people lined up around the block to see Jaws in 1975. Of course, Star Wars. We're talking about the original here, not the new one. The original, 1977, A New Hope. Tron. Crappy movie, but one hell of a visual style that still holds up today. I mean, I'll pop in that DVD and just go, wow, that's cool. Very visionary. War Games. Why is War Games on this list? Oh, it's so cheesy. Terminator 2. At the time, ILM was pushing the bounds with their effects, with the whole T-1000 and everything. Jurassic Park, obviously in 1993. That is the film that made George Lucas go, okay, time to make prequels. The Fifth Element, also very visually very pretty. Starship Troopers, that one still holds up pretty well. You know, it's kind of campy and over the top, but fun. Here's another one that probably shouldn't be on the list. Office Space. The only thing about Office Space that I think is unique is, yeah, it's funny, and it caught on way after its theatrical failure. The Matrix, the original Matrix from 1999, came out of nowhere, blew everyone away. You're hard-pressed to find someone who wasn't affected a little bit by The Matrix. And then lastly, Metropolis. Not the anime, we're talking the silent film from 1927, a movie that definitely influenced a lot of things, all the way up through Star Wars, actually. So there you go, the top 12 movies. Steve, what is missing off this list?
I agree with the number one choice. Metropolis certainly had a humongous impact, especially for a movie of that day and age. It was way ahead of its time. And I agree, without that, you probably wouldn't have had Star Trek and Star Wars, and certainly not looking and feeling the way they did.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as far as what should be on there that isn't, one of the first things that popped in my head was Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. What about... Let's think about old school Hollywood here. Wizard of Oz.
Wizard of Oz. I have to give up that one. I'm really shocked that that's not on the list.
How about King Kong? The original, 1933.
If we're going to include King Kong, then you also have to include Jason and the Argonauts.
Okay, yeah, yeah. Ray Harryhausen, absolutely. The whole stop motion deal, definitely. I say another Kubrick one is missing from here because it was futuristic, but it wasn't sci-fi. Clockwork Orange.
It's funny you say that because I kind of had a feeling that's where you were going. That was on the tip of my tongue. I have to agree with A Clockwork Orange. Considered underground and cultish by most, definitely, in terms of cinematography, something that had not been done before.
Mm-hmm. And how about giving Ridley Scott some love here? Blade Runner, Alien. Hello, where are these movies?
Well, the first one, certainly.
Yeah, yeah. The first Alien and then Blade Runner, you know, that won Oscars in 1982. And it was, I think, definitely a movie ahead of its time. It didn't find its audience until later on home video with, you know, Laserdisc and VHS, firstly, of course. Oh, Citizen Kane.
Orson Welles, there you go. Rosebud.
Yeah, talk about a visionary masterpiece. My God, the lighting effects alone in that. The editing style, I mean, it's just timeless.
I was reading Kevin Smith's blog last week, and he still says to this day, that is a perfect film. the cinematography and the direction involved in that movie, it should be the bar for which every director should work to achieve.
Yeah, and if you've never seen Citizen Kane and you're going, ah, it's old, it's boring, it's about the rise and fall of a newspaper, a conglomerate corporate dude, it's like, nah, it's not really that simple. You have to look at and appreciate the intense visual genius of all this. Orson Welles was really, the guy knew what he was doing.
Yeah, you have to appreciate subtext. When we're talking about films that really broke the barrier and put themselves on the map, we're not talking about grosses, we're not talking about theater attendance. We're talking about movies that people walk away with years and years and years down the line, and it still has a profound impact on you psychologically and emotionally, and you harken back to that. And I don't know, I guess us as movie viewers, we also raise the bar a bit too after seeing, you know, most of these movies on the list. I do agree there's a couple on there that certainly don't belong in there. Office Space certainly does not belong on there.
Yeah, and War Games.
I mean, I loved that movie growing up. I think that's the movie that introduced me to Matthew Broderick. And it was a good movie, but it should be in a list like this for some outstanding achievements. I certainly don't see what they're basing that on.
Yeah, it just makes you laugh at the whole Cold War notion of, you know, Russia versus the U.S. and the whole threat of nuclear war. You know, in the early 80s, that was just a prominent theme in movies and TV.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to see a better made movie with more action and probably even some more visual acuity than War Games, then go check out Red Dawn.
Oh, there you go.
But again, nothing earth-shattering, nothing groundbreaking about that film.
No. And I know for you and me, Steve, I mean, we could remember just like it were happening yesterday, walking in and seeing Star Wars for the first time. I mean, I have intense and burned, ingrained in my head, you know, memories of seeing that the very first time.
You and I were both youngins at the time, but I mean, I think we knew in the recesses of our mind, even then, this was something special.
Absolutely.
It's the same argument that's made towards all the CG kids films coming out nowadays. You find this relatively successful formula and you think you can just put it into a machine and just keep cranking out all these copies, and it doesn't work that way. That's why, you know, I was tempted to mention some other films that have been really visually impressive, but then I think about it and go, no, because it's not stuff that was pioneering. It's just all stuff that had been done before, perhaps put in a different package and looked a little prettier, but in terms of the technology or what it brought to filmmaking, it really doesn't hold up to that. One I will add onto there, though, not necessarily having to do with traditional actors and directors, is Final Fantasy VII Advent Children.
Yes. Agreed.
It was really interesting to watch the documentary with the Japanese production crew to say, we could have pushed the envelope even further. We could have made people look a lot more lifelike, but at that point, you'd have a difficult time suspending your belief that real people are in this scenario.
Yeah, there comes a point where the CG just becomes creepy and it just weirds people out. Like some of Polar Express, I didn't see it, but some people say it's like, no, that's just too eerily just realistic. Let's pull it back.
And it's all mocap, you know, it's all motion capture with the actors, and they basically just skinning them with the CG later on. And nowadays it's so typical, you know, from commercials to certain things on like Cartoon Network and in film, that it's not new, it's not revolutionary. It makes me wonder what the next big thing is going to be.
I think we're going to see the evolution. We've already seen it in its primal stages on X3. You know, Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen were youngified for flashback scenes, and we're going to probably see that again and see that evolve. It wouldn't surprise me in like 20 years if you had actors go into like a mocap studio and do some basic scanning in to a computer system and basically just voice over their roles and not have to sit on a set for 18-hour days.
You look at a director like George Lucas, who has been very vocal and very candid about saying his entire objective is to eliminate actors. So, like you said, if people can go in and lay down the reference material, at what point do you really need the actors? And the other thing, too, is, yeah, with X3, with what they did with Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen at the beginning of the film, that was absolutely amazing. And I know McKellen did say that they were going to use that same technique for the Magneto prequel because it was going to take place a lot earlier than the events of the first X-Men movie. I think it's really cool. But then it makes me wonder, too, at what point, like, say, Ian McKellen dies next year, are they going to keep making movies with him in it because they have that material available?
Ooh, yeah.
I mean, the estate of Sir Ian McKellen might say, hey, this is a moneymaker.
Hey, if L. Ron Hubbard can keep publishing books from beyond the grave, anything's possible.
Let's not go there. Might get a hit squad on us.
You know, Tom Cruise is the new Jesus for the Church of Scientology. But anyway...
Japan-only games possible for U.S. Virtual Console. Nintendo is open to the possibility of putting Japan-only classic games on the U.S. Virtual Console, says Senior Vice President George Harrison. No, not the guy from the Beatles. He says, we are aware that there are some very successful Japanese franchises that have a small following in the U.S. and that they could never be reached by putting these products out retail. We're open to games released in Japan if we can get them translated properly. But, Harrison adds, for the time being, Nintendo of America is busy enough working through the major games that have already been released. Hopefully we'll have a lot more of this to report on in the near future.
And we should illuminate listeners that the Virtual Console is the online element of the Wii, if you have a Wii.
Which I do not yet.
Me neither.
But the one thing that's really cool when it comes to Nintendo is... You actually learned me to this, Kyle, that Best Buy, for the most part, is starting to carry import games. And I was over at my local Best Buy, and I saw a couple Naruto games. I saw Jump Superstars. A little bit pricey, but I guess from what I'm hearing from people, including yourself, is that I guess it's kind of what you're going to pay for an import regardless.
Yeah, I picked up Jump Ultimate Stars. I've seen it at Fry's and Best Buy. I've seen Bleach games, Naruto, yeah, all sorts of import games. And they'll put a little warning sticker on there saying, you know, the text on this game is in Japanese. And they're just covering their ass, basically saying, you buy it as is. We're not promising anything in English.
But it's really cool for Nintendo to have opened that door, at least, to say that there's a market out there for these games.
It rocks! Well, that's all the news we got for this week. If you have anything you want to comment on or submit, we'll, of course, give you credit. You can get in touch with us the various ways. Maria will tell you all about that shortly. So we encourage you to keep listening, keep downloading. Thank you very much for doing so. Until next time, this is Kyle Hebert.
And this is Otherworld Steve.
See ya!
Visit our official blog page at bigbaldbroadcast.blogspot.com. Donations are graciously accepted and appreciated. Please email us at thebigbaldbroadcast@gmail.com. You can also leave a voicemail on our listener line at 818-574-3607. Additional announcements by Maria Vu. Remember to stay geeky!
That was totally wicked!